I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. As Jackson County prosecutor, you would think Jean Peters Baker would have enough to keep her busy. Besides overseeing more than 70 attorneys with a multitude of felony cases, the latest election just handed her oversight of the county's combat program. So why would Peters Baker want to fill the leadership spot for the Missouri Democratic Party? How would she balance that with her current position? We'll ask her today. Then the film critics join us with an array of movies to review, from a Danish thriller to real-life stories to the latest from the Coen brothers. They'll let you know which should be on your viewing list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Jackson County Prosecutor Jean Peters Baker has been much in the news this past month. First came her announcement that her office will stop prosecuting most marijuana possession cases. A week later, word came that she wants to add to her duties by becoming chairwoman of the Missouri Democratic Party. All that suggests this is a good time for a conversation with the two-term prosecutor. Jean, nice to have you here. Welcome back, as always.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You've decided that it's time to stop prosecuting most marijuana possession cases, and I'm wondering why and why now?
Well, why now is because the voters really spoke loudly on that issue. In fact, 66% across the entire state of Missouri voted in favor of that measure for medical marijuana. But in Jackson County, eastern Jackson County, it was about 71%. And in Kansas City, Missouri, it was 81% in favor. So that's a mandate. And and folks that are in office need to listen to what the voters are saying.
But the vote was on medical marijuana, as you just pointed out. It wasn't on recreational marijuana. And you've gone in that direction.
You're right. Now, maybe that's a little bit of pragmatism of how I run my office. It's been hard for a number of years to get jury's approval on those cases. And I think this vote just made that so much harder. It was just going to be such a steeper climb to get there that we need to put our time and attention on cases that we can win approval on. And that's violent crime, property crimes, all those other issues that are very important to residents of Jackson County.
You know, some might wonder if a county prosecutor has the discretion to do what you're doing here. Do you?
Yeah. I think that's fair. I took an oath to uphold the laws
that's
of the
right.
state of Missouri, and I take that oath extremely seriously. I don't pick laws that I think I like, and those are the ones I'm going to follow, and the other ones we'll just ignore. But I also have to listen to voters and pay attention to what they're saying and also take an assessment of what is successful in my office, because we do have a threshold of the amount of crime that we can successfully handle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I simply wanted to listen to voters and push resources in a place that was smarter for all of us.
Before we walk away from this, I wanted to read you the reactions to your announcement from two other area prosecutors. Clay County Prosecutor Daniel White said this, Gene, "The state of Missouri tells me what is legal and what's not legal, and my job is to enforce it. And we're going to handle what the police departments bring us and the state of Missouri says is a crime." Meantime, Platte County Prosecutor Eric Zahn pointed out that the state's medical marijuana amendment did not decriminalize marijuana for recreational use, as we just talked about. He said this, "Amendment 2 only allows people with specified medical conditions to use marijuana under Missouri law with a doctor's recommendation pursuant to regulations that have not yet been written. Possession of marijuana is illegal in Missouri today, and in Platte County, we will continue to enforce the laws as enacted by the legislature or the state's voters." Are those two prosecutors wrong?
They're not. I trust those two prosecutors to understand their own jurisdictions and what works for them. They, too, however, have to look at that statewide mandate, and they have to figure out how it's going to work in their jurisdiction. Though those prosecutors are correct that recreational marijuana is still illegal, that is something I have some exceptions in my policy as well.
I was going to ask you about the exceptions.
There are exceptions to my policy. But the law becomes effective December the 6th. Regulations are not. The law is effective. So, the criminal defendants get the benefit of that. And in Jackson County, where we shoulder the vast majority of the burden for the metro region of violent crime, I needed to put our attention there.
What are the exceptions to your new policy?
So we wanted to remind voters that it is still illegal, and we will seek harsh measures against people who drive while drugged. So that's way outside of the confines of the law.
And you're planning a public relations campaign of some kind to focus on that.
I am. I think it's important to remind people that we will have no toleration of that kind of behavior. It's dangerous, and it seeks to harm. Whether you seek it or not, it could very well harm other people. For those who have drugs in easy access of their children, I worry about that. My study of other jurisdictions that have already gone to this kind of measure have found an increased number of kids being brought to the ER because marijuana is packaged now in different ways. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in gummy bears or in suckers. And kids grab it and they consume it and they end up in the ER. So I want to make sure people hear me. We're not going to be tolerating that in Jackson County. You're going to look at child endangerment charges or other types of charges that are possible in those kinds of situations. Guns and drugs together, we won't tolerate that behavior. So, and there could be some other exceptions as well. Those who possess marijuana that I can prove they have the intent to distribute that. Those are still well within the confines of what my office is going to handle.
Now, are there people in the Jackson County Jail today who might be released as a result of your new policy?
Wow. No.
Why not?
Absolutely not. So, there's no room in the Jackson County Jail, and there has not been for 20 years for people who have possessed marijuana.
Okay.
So, no.
That's too low level.
Absolutely. That's too low a level. And that's just been our reality. So perhaps the reality of Jackson County is quite different than the reality of Platte County or even in Clay County. And so I trust those prosecutors to handle their jurisdictions as they assess their own pool of potential jurors.
You know, is there a downside for Missourians when you have laws being enforced one way in Clay and Platte counties, for instance, and in a different way in Jackson County? Does that create complications, confusion that maybe we should not be dealing with right now?
Oh, perhaps. But I trust that we can figure those things out. We're not too far apart, to be honest, on most issues. So, I want to make sure we're doing trainings for law enforcement so they understand what's expected on our end and how things may have shifted for them and how things are still going to be the same.
Yeah.
So we'll work through it.
Is it possible, just a final point here, could the Attorney General of Missouri or some other legal entity come in here and overrule your approach, or do you have discretion to do what you're doing?
No, the Attorney General does not have that kind of exclusive jurisdiction to prosecute those cases in my jurisdiction.
Okay. Jackson County Prosecutor Jean Peters Baker is my guest. Let's go to your other big announcement this month, which was your announcement of your candidacy to become the next chair of the Missouri Democratic Party. Why do you want the job? You know, Democrats obviously are in pretty rough shape right now across the entire state of Missouri. You'd be taking on a big bite of the apple here.
Yeah. Look, I think what happened when I watched those results come in earlier this month, and when I saw Senator McCaskill lose her seat, I simply thought it's time. It's time for me to step up and help, shoulder part of this burden. She shouldered it for a long time. And it was I just felt an obligation and a duty to step up in that way. So that's why I'm doing it.
What would you do to revive the fortunes of a party that is, for those of us who have been around a while, you can't believe how low Democrats are now compared to where they were even 25 years ago?
Sure. Look, I would, there were some comments made by Senator Blunt recently that said, hey, be careful about ruling the Democrats out. I appreciated that because that's good sage advice. I believe highly in the two-party system. As ugly as it can be sometimes, as ugly as politics can be, I believe in the power of that two-party system. And we get better service among our politicians when they are put in a process where they have to compromise and they have to find room for negotiation. That is better representation, I'm sure of it, at the end of the day. I've been in those rooms where you're trying to come to compromise and debate, and sometimes it can get a little bit personal. But at the end of it, it's better for those average Missourians. They get a better product. So that's why I'm at it. I want to make sure that all Missourians have a voice and that we're just not ceding our role. I disagree with you in the sense that, Democrats are down and out. We're down, but I'll be damned if we're out. We are not out. There is so much more that we can do. We are the party of the big tent, and in that big tent is room for a variety of points of view. So that means this new blood that's come into the fold that are highly progressive. They want to see criminal justice reform. Mm-hmm. Their voice is so important to this party and the future of this party.
How about folks who oppose abortion rights? Do they have a place in the Missouri Democratic Party?
They do have a place.
Because Kansas Democrats have said, in a sense, those who feel that way, including a candidate for the governor this last year, you don't have a place under this tent.
Right. And there has been a process where the party itself took positions. So I'm not trying to undo those party positions. Those have been cast. But the point I want to make is, let's not get too tied up on particular issues. There needs to be room in this tent for a variety of voices. And I want to be able to carry all of those voices. So the more established part of the party, the experience that's there, those that have years and decades of experience helping get Democrats elected, their voice is critical. Their experience is critical. So I will not allow those folks to be edged out either. But you know what? If we have an effective leader, we can have both. There's no reason that we cannot have both.
You know, the outgoing chairman, a young guy named Stephen Weber, is a former state rep. You know, my sense was he worked his tail off trying to boost the fortunes of this party during this campaign all over the state of Missouri. And, you look at the results of the election, even a candidate as formidable as Claire McCaskill, 22%, 26% in rural county after rural county. It just seemed to mark sort of a sea change in my mind for so much of Missouri being even remotely competitive.
So I share your opinion about Stephen. I think Stephen did a really good job. I actually served with him for a brief time in the Missouri House, got to know him a little bit there, and I think he did a really fine job in representing the party this past 2 years.
Yeah.
The outcomes were not what we wanted and not what we sought, and certainly not for Senator McCaskill. But the voters spoke, and it's time for us to take a listen to what they told us and reshape the Democratic Party going forward to 2020.
So this job, just to be clear, would be in addition to your duties in Jackson County, right?
You bet. Yeah, it's in addition. And I think
nothing like carrying too much of a load, Gene. Yeah.
So, I guess the way I answer that is I have a very strong work ethic. I love my job of prosecutor, so it doesn't feel like work to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that I live and I breathe. But I also love the Democratic Party, and I feel I've got room to do it. So we will actually hire staff, though, and have an executive director that will help certainly carry that water. I think my job would be largely in recruiting candidates and raising money for the party.
You know, voters in Missouri gave a big thumbs up to the Clean Missouri Ethics Initiative in November. It calls for big changes to redistricting. What's your sense of the type of boost this could give Democrats going forward when it comes to winning more seats in the state house?
Well, look, I think one role of the next chair of the Missouri Democratic Party is defending the voters' vote on that piece of legislation. I think it's in jeopardy, and I think it must be protected. So we'll see what happens there, but I am concerned about a legal challenge made to what the voters just approved.
You're going to have competition for this position, it sounds like.
I sure am. So however this turns out is how it turns out. I will support whoever is selected. Like I just said, I believe in the democratic process. And there is another young woman that is that has thrown her name in for this. There are a couple of others as well. And I don't know how it will turn out. So we'll see.
You know, it wouldn't be a reach for someone like me to conclude that this might be a way for you to become better known for the potential of a statewide candidacy yourself at some point down the road.
I suppose you could look at it that way, too. But what I've told you is what I believe in my heart of hearts, that the day after the election, thinking about Claire's loss, what that meant to me, I just believed it was my time. It was my time to offer this service. And, you know, maybe there's someone better that will be able to do this. We'll see. But that's why I'm in.
She's been a mentor of yours for any number of years, right?
She has been. We, I have my own points of view. I serve my constituents. But there is no doubt that she made a mark on me about who I am. And certainly that she paved the way for me to hold the seat of Jackson County Prosecutor.
Jean Peters Baker is my guest. She is the Jackson County Prosecutor. Let's turn to crime, Jean. The numbers, you know, might be slightly better than last year, at least when it comes to homicides in Kansas City, Missouri. But there's no question this aspect of our town is still pretty ugly. What do you see happening out there? What are the trends? What are you worried about these days?
Yeah, this is such a problem for Kansas City, and it remains a problem. Even though the numbers are slightly better this year, better does not mean good. So this burdens me. It burdens me that we can't get our fingers around this. It is not for lack of trying. It is so we are my partners. And when I say my partners, I mean the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, the U.S. Attorney's Office, probation and parole, ATF, FBI. I could go on, UMKC.
Right.
We continue to try and put our fingers around this. And so we're in an era of sort of retooling what this KC Nova effort is,
right,
and how we might be able to make it more effective.
This is wraparound services, trying to do more than just put people in jail, giving people jobs, social services, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes, that's part of it.
Part of it.
The other part, though, is really using the hammer on people who are creating violence in our community. So it's both.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a more well-rounded approach to fighting violence. So we're in a moment right now of retooling that effort to see how we might be able to make it more effective going forward.
What kind of changes are you looking at making there?
Well,
at one point, that whole approach seemed to hold so much promise. The numbers had dipped a few years ago and people were hopeful. And boy, the last few years have been pretty rough.
So they did dip.
Mm-hmm.
They did dip. 2014 was a dip for us. And we believe it was in large part due to our efforts with KC Nova. But even that year, 2014, we were so disappointed in the number that we had. It was still far too high for us. It was disappointing. I expected that we'd hang on to this longer than we did, because it was really the next year that number inched back upward. But what we know about this effort nationally is that it does have a sustainability issue. And so we are trying to listen to the experts in how we might be able to retool this so that we can regain some of that ground we found in 2014.
What's the issue there? Oh, the sustainability thing you just mentioned. What happens? Does the effort peter out or lose steam after a while?
It seems to lose steam. In the other cities that I've studied that have employed this kind of effort, it does have an initial boost, and then you lose ground. I can't tell you exactly why all that is, because I leave that to the academics to determine, and they don't have a real clear answer on it yet. Hmm. I will also tell you, though, the year that we rolled this out in earnest and we really started fighting, this Casey Nova approach in a different way, fighting violence, was the same year that Ferguson really was occurring and
right.
happening. So that may be a factor. I've always thought that was a pretty big factor in our sustainability success.
Your office has just launched a relatively new program, Caring for Crime Survivors. Tell us about that.
I'm really proud of this, but I'm a little embarrassed to tell you how long it took me to figure out that my office only touches about 50% of homicide victims that are out there in Kansas City, and an even smaller number of non-fatal shooting victims.
You just don't have enough people to reach everybody?
No, they're not solved cases.
Oh, okay.
Right. So when cases aren't solved, they're never going to come to the prosecutor's office. Now, this is not for lack of police trying. Mm-hmm. I think that this police department does a really phenomenal job. But the reality is that I only see about half these homicide victims and far fewer non-fatal shooting victims. So we wanted to make sure we're getting to them. If we don't reach out to victims who have been harmed by violence and we're allowing them to just fend for themselves, then we should expect to have a community that's not very healthy. Right. So if I can step into that space in some small way with a knock on the door that says, hey, your case may never be solved, but we are here to assist you and help you. We want to make sure that you have services that you need. So if that is in-home counseling services, we want to provide them. If it is, that shooting that happened created a huge economic burden on your family, we want to try and reach that. Children in the home that experience some level of trauma, they're getting help for the trauma that they witnessed and experienced. So those are the things that I want to try and do, and we're doing it proactively with a knock on the door, with a team of experts in order to offer those services.
You know, Gene, just a final point today before you got to run. You know, has there been any improvement in this long-standing idea that so many members of the community on the East Side particularly are reluctant to talk to police, are reluctant to talk to members of your own staff? Is that changing, or does that remain one of those problems that's just not getting any better?
You know, it's still a problem for us, and I will say it's only anecdotal that I can share this part with you, but it's better. I feel it's better than it once was. I mean, you have to keep in mind, I've been a member of the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office now for over 20 years, and I feel it's better that we are more successful in the cases that we file, that we get to trial. And I think that's because, well, there's only one reason. That's because we have ample evidence to get to court and see success rates in those cases. And that evidence is witness testimony.
Mm-hmm. That's Jackson County Prosecutor Gene Peters-Baker. Gene, it's always great to have you here. Happy holidays to you. And as
Same
always, thanks
you.
For taking some time. Okay.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll visit with our film critics about films you should get out and see sometime real soon. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. A lot of you were not happy with KCMO snow removal this week, and you let city council members know it with your phone calls yesterday. Hear that conversation and others at kcur.org/up-to-date. Monday, beloved children's author and a favorite guest of this program, Kate DiCamillo, joins us to discuss her latest children's book. That's Monday on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, here we are at the end of another year, and anyone who knows movies series knows of a long-standing truism in Hollywood: many of the best films are saved for last. That means many of the best movies of the year typically are released late in the year to improve their chances of winning some of the big awards come January and February. That's a long way of saying this is a prime movie-watching time, and we'll see if the late-year crop of films this year match the quality of other recent years. With us for the latest rundown of what's showing around town are our film critics. They are film professor Cindy Haynes. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Steve Walker is here.
Steven, I am here. Thanks, Steve.
And Bob Butler, you can read his reviews at butlercinemascene.com, as I do all the time. Bob, nice to have you.
Thank you, and delighted.
Let's launch right in, Bob Butler. Let's go to a film. It's titled Border. It's an extremely original film from Sweden. Border subverts half a dozen genres like supernatural, horror, social realism, romance, on its way to being the ultimate in Nordic noir.
This is Sweden's nomination for Best Foreign Language Film.
Wow.
Now, I would compare it favorably with the winner of last year's Best Picture, The Shape of Water. It's a fantasy with really human things going on at the core. Okay, we meet a woman called Tina, who is a Swedish customs official. She looks like one of our prehistoric ancestors. This is an ugly woman. And in fact, Eva Melander, the actress who played her, gained 40 pounds and underwent 4 hours of makeup every day to play this character. The makeup is so good, the acting is so good, I actually thought the director, a guy named Ali Abbasi, had found some sort of semi-deformed person and taught them to act. It was that good. Anyway, Tina is a good customs official because she has a nose for fear. Literally, she can smell people who are guilty. She's able to bring up a child pornography ring because she can smell things in this guy's luggage.
Mm.
Well,
she can smell him.
Yes,
right.
She can smell
right.
people.
And his nervousness.
Well, the first half of this movie, I thought this is going to be a movie about a sensitive soul in a warped body. Then she meets someone that seems to be a lot like her, someone who is smuggling stuff in the country, and becomes a romance, and then it evolves or catapults into this celebration of Nordic folklore. I will not give you the big reveal, but I was so suckered in that by the time this was over, I was just shaking my head in wonder and joy.
Wow.
I described it in my 3 to see as just so confident in its utter weirdness. It's really something.
Jerry Harrington brought it back. He held it over because, in fact, bad weather last week, you know, prevented a lot of people from going to the movies, and it really is worth your time. It's an amazing
movie. So this is something
movie.
A little different,
way different.
It was based on a short story by John Lindquist, who also wrote another movie I loved, Let the Right One In.
You can see the vampire movie about the kids.
Okay, That's right.
So this is an excellent movie.
So three thumbs up. Why is this nominated just for foreign language? Why wouldn't it be up for Best Picture?
Well, in theory it is, but how do you get it to the attention of the Academy voters?
Right.
Every country picks a movie to promote, and that's how you get it out there.
Right, and that's the only way it would ever get a chance at a nomination.
This performance is unbelievable.
I've seen her name on a few lists of Best Actress.
The film, again, is titled Border. Just one word there. Okay, Steve Walker, let's move on to a film titled The Guilty. Two words. Alarm dispatcher Asger Holm answers an emergency call from a kidnapped woman. When the call is suddenly disconnected, the search for the woman and her kidnapper begins.
And this movie is intense. It's riveting. It shows sound design at its most virtuistic. If you don't know what sound design is only because you see superhero movies, this will show you what sound design is really about. He is an emergency call operator. He gets a plea, help me, help me. Mm. And the whole movie is shot in the office where he works. And he begins to get on other phones and call in some colleagues and tries to unravel some clues about it seems to be a horrific crime in progress, and he's trying to save her, help her.
And to think that a movie was set entirely in one location, indoors.
Mostly focusing on this guy's face.
On this guy's face.
Occasionally you see somebody in the background, but that's about it.
Yeah, and you're thinking, how can this work? How can it, you know, maintain your attention? And it is terrific. Tom Hardy did a movie.
Where he was in the car.
Where he was in a car the whole time. And they're somewhat parallels in here, but
this is much better than that movie.
This one really worked.
And this is Denmark's submission for Best Foreign Film.
I was going to say, the director is Swedish, so the Swedes are bringing it home this holiday.
They
well,
are.
The Sweden only gets one submission, and Denmark gets one, and this is it.
But
the,
but
it's playing at Alamo, by the way.
Yeah. Ah.
But this new genre, Nordic noir. Yeah. Think of it.
So that film is titled The Guilty, and three thumbs up for the first two films were two for two here. Okay, let's move to a film that I just saw because I just like politics a lot. Bob Butler, the film is titled Front Runner. It's a look at the 1988 campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Gary Hart, who, and that campaign is derailed when he's caught having an affair with a woman named Donna Rice.
Well, this stars Hugh Jackman. Some of my colleagues here will argue that he was badly miscast.
I would say that, yes.
He's playing Gary Hart. Now, here's the thing about Gary Hart. I feel about Gary Hart kind of the way I felt about Anthony Weiner. The guy's stands were right on. His personal life was directly from Hades. Gary Hart, in 1988, was leading the Democratic PAC for president.
Mm-hmm.
A reporter was going to question him about rumors about his personal life, and he basically told the reporter, follow me, you're not going to see anything, it's boring. The reporters followed him. It's about the point in history where a candidate's personal life suddenly became viable for coverage. Now, you got to go back. I mean, it isn't like we ignored politicians. Harding had a baby out of wedlock, and one of the campaign's ads, one of the chants was, Mama, Mama, where's my paw? Gone to the White House. Ha, ha, ha. Anyway.
But the media didn't cover personal
But the media didn't cover this stuff like with the fury
Kennedy,
they do now.
Through Johnson, and then suddenly with Gary Hart, that all changed.
Basically, arrogance, pride, that's what kills Greek heroes, and that's what killed Gary Hart, because he maintained that it's all about my wonky ideas. It has nothing to do with who I am as a person. And America disagreed. We have a clip here of J.K. Simmons playing his campaign manager, trying to navigate this mess he's in.
This is from Front Runner.
They can write all this crap all they want. They will not earn the dignity of my response.
Jesus, Gary, what about us? Do we deserve a response?
About this?
Yeah.
No.
Are you kidding me? I got 100 kids unpacking boxes in Denver right now because we told them you would do what it takes to win this thing.
The height of irony, of course, in the story, if you recall it, is that the yacht he was on, cavorting with Miss Rice, or allegedly, was
allegedly
called Monkey Business, and the movie
didn't help any.
makes a little too jokey. It makes that a little bit too jokey for me.
And it was a case of really, who cares? So he's having this affair, and I think Hugh Jackman was the wrong actor.
Well,
for
I was going to say, why is Hugh Jackman? I didn't have that reaction when I watched it. What bothered you so much about it?
I don't know. I don't remember Hart all that much, but I do remember him being interviewed and being on TV. And
kind of a dashing guy, hung out with Warren Beatty. That Hugh Jackman portrayal sort of worked for me that way.
Anyway, I just think, he was way too arrogant.
I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I mean, it was fine. Director Reitman has made a lot better films.
Here's a man who I think the bottom line is he was kind of unknowable, and he liked it that way.
Yeah. Well, Bob, you're a journalist. The media here is portrayed not all that graciously here.
Well, they're at a point. Well, these Miami reporters who followed Donna Rice to Washington for this assignation. They are questioning themselves if they should be doing it.
Of course.
And, a lot of people say this is where politics changed. Isn't it ironic that now we know all about the peccadilloes of politicians and no one cares anymore? Apparently, you can get elected no matter what you've done.
Well, there's some irony here that we had the front runner for the Democratic nomination derailed by this in 88. 4 years later, a candidate named Bill Clinton came along, was nearly derailed, but wobbled and then managed to stay the course.
Well, and I think that what we're seeing in that spread of time is the evolution of public sentiment about what really matters to them in a candidate anymore.
Yeah, right. Again, that film is Front Runner. And would you give it a thumbs up, Bob?
I gave it a moderate thumbs up. I wasn't wildly enthusiastic about it.
And the two
as
of
many
you?
Good movies that are out there, this is not worth
in my top five or ten.
Well, I liked it. Darn
it's
it.
Good. Yeah,
it's okay.
I'm going to stand by it. I like the film. Yeah. Okay, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're visiting with our film critics about the latest and best films showing on area screens now. Right now, mostly independent films. Cindy Haynes is here, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Steve, let's go to a film. It's titled Boy Erased. It's about the gay son of a pastor which must either subject himself to conversion therapy or face being shunned by his family and friends.
This is based on a true story. A man named Gerard Conley was outed to his parents by a vicious phone call when he was a freshman in college, and his parents were very religious. And it did some research and heard about this gay conversion therapy program. And they, with the, all of that, they're still in existence, though. I think Kansas and Missouri are two of the states that still allow this nonsense. And basically, they teach the kids how to stand more masculinely and pray the gay away, basically. And it's been, written off by every psychiatric organization and mental health organization. But here, what makes it interesting is that mom got better. He learns a lot. The kid, played by Lucas Hedges, who was Oscar-nominated for Manchester by the Sea, his parents, Russell Crowe, Nicole Kidman, both Australian, but they're all they're playing Americans here. And this was written and directed by Joel Edgerton, who's an actor. You'll know his face.
Australian actor.
Who was Australian. And he plays the guy who runs the camp and tries to get the boys to – and there's some girls at the camp,
too. Yeah, there's
too,
girls, too.
And there's some grown men in the camp. You'd think it would be all teenagers. This is a wonderful movie. It's very hard to watch at times because some of the messages that they inflicted on those young people.
Well, one of the things about it that makes the movie interesting to me is that it – although it's about a discredited form of therapy,
right.
I don't feel that it was any hatred there toward the people that were doing it. You got the sense that the people running the program were, for the most part, sincere. Maybe wrong, but sincere.
Right.
It would be easy to demonize, and
yeah,
it would probably be more dramatic if it was easy, if you could demonize, but I think they played it very even-handedly.
We have a clip here, Stephen, from Boy Erased.
We do. This is Lucas Hedges talking to one of the other kids who are at the camp, and the kid's giving him some advice how to get through it.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. I'm fine.
I'm going to give you some advice. Play the part. Show them it's working. You're getting better. Fake it until you make it, right?
But hard to watch this film.
It's hard to watch because of the pain of the kids put somewhere because their parents think there's something wrong with them.
The great irony, you get a credit at the end that says the guy who founded the camp is now living with his male lover. So
that's the height of hypocrisy, which, of course.
Get out of here.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on here to a film that I'm sort of interested in checking out, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. It's the latest from the Coen brothers. It's an anthology of six stories set in the Old West, Cindy Haynes.
Well, there's a revolution going on right now. Netflix has borrowed $10 billion to basically upend the entire film industry.
Really?
Yes. And this is one of the films. There's another one called Roma. By Mexican filmmaker Cuarón, which is a brilliant film. I'm assuming most of us like the movies of the Coen brothers. So they go to Netflix, they're flush with cash, and they set up an opportunity to do a series of six films or six episodes. And so, but there were some issues with the Coen brothers and with Netflix, so they wound up bringing it down to, I think it's about two hours and 10 minutes. 2 hours and 10 minutes. So you have these vignettes, a series of vignettes,
and
can release it in a movie theater. I think it's great fun. The Coen brothers are among the most entertaining filmmakers, I think, working today with a message, with a story to tell. So we have...
And you can't see this in the theater or not?
In some cities you could. It was an Oscar qualifying run, basically.
Yes, in order to qualify getting awards.
But
it had
here
to
you got
to
see it.
Movie.
You watch it on Netflix.
Right.
And
okay.
You can watch it on Netflix. A brand new Coen brothers movie.
Yeah.
Tim Blake Nelson is the title character. And he... Actually, this is my favorite episode of the entire series. James Franco is in it. He plays a dumb bank robber. There's Meal Ticket. Liam Neeson is in it. He's a caretaker of a man without limbs, played by Harry Melling. Steve, mm-hmm. You know who he is.
Well, no, I just wrote his name down because he's so extraordinary in this movie.
Yeah. And he travels around reciting the Gettysburg Address, Shakespeare, the Bible. Zoe Kazan is in it. She plays a woman who's traveling the Oregon Trail. Tom Waits plays a prospector who is destroying the pristine valley in his search for gold. It's worth your time. It really is.
It's a reevaluation of a lot of Western cliches.
Sure. It's beautifully shot.
I think my favorite moment is when a man is standing on the scaffold with a noose around his neck. He's weeping uncontrollably, and the guy next to him, also with a noose around his neck, says, "First time?"
Oh, you're kidding.
No, it's brilliant.
And if one story doesn't grab you,
something else.
There's going to be another one
in there. And I could see where there was real value of cutting down these episodes, because I think some of them would not sustain, what, 45 minutes or an hour?
It's like a bunch of Hart Crane short stories all in one sitting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's done very cleverly with a book, as the pages are turned and their illustrations, and we move into the next vignette.
What's the clip we have here, Cindy?
What we have is Tim Blake Nelson walks into a bar and introduces himself.
He's a saloon.
He's a singing cowboy. You got to know this.
Oh, yes. He looks like Gene Autry.
This is from the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Can't no one compel another man to engage in recreation. Certainly not a son of a gun as ill-humored as yourself. And as for names, my horse is Dan. I'm Buster. Buster Scruggs.
Buster Scruggs? The run from Riata Pass? And this pistol.
I do hail from Riata Pass, which is in the county of San Saba, being the which of why the San Saba songbird is my sobriquet of preference. But right now, I'd appreciate it if you'd deposit your weapon in the receptacle by the swinging doors, which concealing of it on your person in the first place was a violation of the rules of this establishment.
Again, that's from the Ballad of Buster Scruggs from the Coen Brothers. You can see it on Netflix. Let's move on to another journalism movie here. It's a private war, Bob. It's about a war correspondent risking her life to tell the horror stories that no one else is brave enough to tell. This is quite a film.
This is a fantastic
yes,
movie. I was not expecting it to be half as moving and as involving as it is. Marie Colvin was an American who went to work for British newspapers. She spent 20 years before her death in 2012 covering so many hot spots. She didn't write about battles. She wrote about what war meant to people.
Right.
And that was her whole thing.
Right.
She was a missionary on it. She lost an eye in Sri Lanka. That would have been enough for me to hang up my spurs, but no, she went out and did more. She's played by Rosamund Pike, who was the evil, wonderful evil heroine of a Gone Girl, who is, I think, my leading contender for best picture or best actress right now. This is a wonderful character study of a person who is so idealistic, and yet she has suffered so much. As pointed out, she saw more combat than hundreds of soldiers ever did. She was, because she kept going back and back and back. She felt compelled to. She had PTSD. She self-medicated with alcohol and sex. She was a mess, and yet she was unbelievably heroic.
Yeah.
This is just a tremendous movie.
There's also a documentary out there right now. I don't know.
It's called Under the Wire. It's available maybe on some of the streaming sites. Basically, it's her in the last pretty much 6 months of her life. There's footage of her in Syria.
What's the clip we have from A Private War?
Well, this is her talking a little bit about why she does what she does.
I fear growing old. I also fear dying young. I'm most happy with a vodka martini in my hand, but I can't stand the fact that the chatter in my head won't go quiet until there's a quart of vodka inside me. I hate being in a war zone. But I also feel compelled. Compelled to see it for myself.
Bob, you've known some foreign correspondents, sure. Some war correspondents. They are a certain breed of human being.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And this was directed by Matthew Heineman, who had a great documentary a couple of years ago called City of Ghosts about the Syrian volunteers who pull victims from the bombs, even as the bombs are falling in Syrian cities. So this guy knew the territory.
The film, again, is a private war. A little tough to watch in places before war.
Well,
it's good for you. Yeah. Steve Walker, how about a film, Beautiful Boy, a father witnesses his son deal with being a drug addict.
Right, and the father is Steve Carell. The son is Timothy Chalamet.
Right.
It's a true story. Both the father and the son in real life wrote books about it and wrote memoirs about it. And it's basically a little glorified after-school special about a kid who's smoking crack and his father's inability to wrap his head around why.
There's several movies out right now. Lucas Hedges is in another movie.
One called Ben Is Back.
Is Back with Julia Roberts about teenagers addicted to drugs.
It's fine. It's about the best I can say for it.
Nothing too terrific
nothing
about
special,
Beautiful Boy.
Nothing special.
Well, the interesting thing for me is that it, by and large, ignored the usual tropes of your addict film, you know, making scoring in the alley and cooking a spoonful of stuff and all that. It's basically about this father's reaction to losing his son, finding his son drifting away. And that's what makes it so hard to watch.
Yeah.
Not to mention the scene where he steals from his little brother's piggy bank to go buy drugs.
But you weren't crazy about the film, though.
I wasn't crazy about it.
But you know, I'm certainly not telling anybody they shouldn't see it.
Oh, no. Right.
Well, let's do this. Let's skip ahead to our final film today. Can You Ever Forgive Me? This is an out of desperation, a destitute writer forges and sells letters by literary icons. It stars Melissa McCarthy, who you all think was pretty good in this role, Cindy.
She is fantastic. If you see any movie that's not too challenging. I mean, we're talking about Border and
Those are some challenging titles. Yeah.
This is a wonderful movie. Can You Ever Forgive Me? I highly recommend it. It's currently showing at Tivoli Fine Arts and I think Liberty Hall in Lawrence.
And while we're talking Oscar, I think there is a Best Supporting Actor nomination
Richard
E. Grant, a face everybody knows, even if you don't know his name, playing her best friend, an aging queen who... Well, I don't know. He just steals every scene he's in. He's terrific.
So if you were to recommend three films for our viewer, our listeners to go check out in the next few days, where would you go with your list, Cindy?
Can You Ever Forgive Me, The Guilty, and Border.
Okay. Steve Walker.
That's Boy Erased, I would put on my list. The Guilty, for sure. And Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Okay.
And for me, Border, A Private War, and Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Okay, great list. I appreciate you all coming in and burning down some of these great films as we near the end of 2018 here. Steve Walker, Cindy Haynes, Bob Butler, always appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
And we'll have our 3 to See up on our webpage later on today. Monday, we discuss the heartbreaking legal battles going on right now over at Kansas City's historic Mutual Musicians Foundation. Our theme music is composed by Bobby Watson. We had help this week from Suzanne Hogan, Linda Scher, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Emily Reed. I'm Steve Kraske. Have a great weekend, everybody. And you are up to date.